The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
On today's show, we're looking at BC's mental health crisis and how it's been impacted by the pandemic. As we look forward to 2021, nearly 40% of people say that their mental health has worsened significantly during the pandemic. That number rises to 54% to anyone who's had to self-isolate because of either having COVID-19 or being a contact of someone who did. And the levels of self-harm have increased to dramatic proportions for people in those situations. At the same time, this week has seen a vigil marking the death of a man shot by police in the middle of a mental health episode, running into the distress and being shot 5 times in the street at Hastings and Princess. After that January 5th incident, just the latest police shooting of someone in mental distress, friends of the man known as Chester said that BC's healthcare system and mental health supports failed Chester, and that police with guns should not have been his front line of access to mental health care. So what would a mental health support system look like in the province? Well, we're talking to Johnny Morris. He's the CEO of the Canadian Mental Health Association of British Columbia. And a note to our listeners, some of the subjects discussed are ones that could be distressing. If you need help or support, please stay tuned. At the end, we're going to announce some phone numbers so you can get help. Welcome back to The Pulse, Johnny. Great to have you here again.
Well, thanks so much, David, for having me back on your critically important show. It's good to hear your voice once more.
I know, you too. You were on my second ever show when we launched this back in March, March 23rd, and you've been on a few times since. So it's you're a nice steady presence here.
Thanks. I do remember the excitement of your second show as you launched that day. And I think we were talking about similar and pressing issues related to mental health. So really excited for the conversation we're going to have today.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to start just, you know, when we've talked every time, we've kind of explored a little further about the mental health impacts of the pandemic on sort of ordinary people in the city. And I think we've learned a lot more over the last 9 months than we did on that first week that we talked to you. What do you think you've learned the most as a mental health advocate and practitioner?
I think one of the biggest things that I've picked up is the important reckoning, and I think it's been clear with regard to the physical health impacts of this pandemic. But the other side of it is the way that the pandemic has revealed some of the fault lines, particularly around equity and inequity. With the disproportionate impact that this pandemic has had on mental health. And we've been collecting a whack of data with UBC and our colleagues nationally. And, you know, what we are seeing is that this pandemic and the unintended consequences of all of the things that are keeping us physically safe is that people living with a mental health or substance use problem, people living with a disability, people who are Indigenous or racialized, people who are experiencing the devastating economic impacts of losing work or losing livelihood, are amongst some of the most impacted when it comes to the question of has your mental health worsened during the pandemic. So I think
for some people, we found that there's also mental health issues that are emerging that are being sparked by the sort of stress and anxiety that maybe the people hadn't been diagnosed before and now are realizing that they're really struggling.
Yeah, I mean, that's the flip side of it too, David, in that mental health, I think, has become such an amplified conversation since March. And there's been a kind of... I think the word universal is wrong, but there's been a kind of a population level set of impacts upon people's mental health. And when we think about workplaces in particular, like working within continuing care, working within hospitals, working within community-based mental health settings, And for many of those folks grappling with the ongoing health emergency related to opioid deaths, those pressures are unprecedented. Those layers of stress and seeing and experience and being parts of things that we've never experienced before are the reality for many across this province.
I wanted to talk about a study that we had reported on in our news headlines last year, but just to remind people that this study that you partnered on with UBC found that 37% of Canadians surveyed reported having worse mental health after the pandemic started, and that rose to over 54% for people who had to self-isolate because of COVID symptoms or knowing someone. And we've also seen a huge rise in people having suicidal ideation or self-harm.
That's right, David. And so we've seen, since those two points in time, we collected data, pretty early on in the pandemic here, and then we went out again in September. And the second catch of data definitely painted a picture that things have worsened. Things have become much more challenging, and populations that experience vulnerability or living conditions that lead to inequity, the impact was much more pronounced there. We're just about to go and collect more data again to help us continue to make the case that with regard to the pandemic, the mental health impacts are and at this point we're speculating, of course, likely to be felt for some time, David.
When you say some time, how long are you imagining? Are we talking months, years, longer?
Well, I think if we look at SARS, right, the last time something similar happened, and of course it was a very, very different scale. It was a much smaller scale. The research has shown there that the mental health impacts for health workers in around that time were pronounced for months, if not years after that. And so it's not to say that that's inevitable, and we're being really cautious there with that too, because we're in uncharted territory with all of this. But when you think about the stress and strain on the healthcare system, when you think about the community social services, much like ours, who are grappling with the ongoing impact of opioid deaths plus pandemic plus many of the other challenges, the opportunity is to really, and we've been doing this and others have been doing this, is to put in place the supports that are required and to advocate for more, because back to your earlier point, there is a likelihood, there is a probability that people will experience a worsening of symptoms and may develop new mental health problems as a result of the circumstances that we're experiencing collectively right now.
Part of the issue, I imagine, is when something isn't treated and is able to build, and that we don't have the publicly funded supports that could help intervene and nip something in the bud as it develops, anxiety, depression, mental illness. I imagine that can kind of have long-lasting impacts and damage. That's something that will take years to potentially address instead of addressing it soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's really important to underscore that, three things. We need to get better at closing the gap between things that have been shown to work, that really do make a difference when it comes to mental health and substance use problems. We need to close the gap between those services and supports and interventions and the people who could benefit from them. We recognize that the longer people wait for care, the worse things can become. And all too often that ends up at a point of crisis and where there are fewer options available. And I think finally, unfortunately, over the years, whilst there has been changes recently in this regard, absolutely, we've typically had a mental health and a substance use system where There's typically a couple of entry points, contact with police or the emergency department, and an absolute need to get better at meeting people where they're at, helping prevent problems from developing in the first place, but also getting to people so that they can access the right care at the right time early, before a crisis happens.
Can you kind of paint a picture of what systems we do have in place for people in British Columbia who need immediate mental health support and longer term ongoing supports?
Yeah, there are a number of pieces, and it's at the same time a simple and a complex story. For some folks, one of the first ports of call is your GP, your doctor, your nurse practitioner, where you would hopefully be able to have a conversation there if you're noticing that something's not feeling quite right with your mental health and your well-being. That's one point. There are agencies like ours who provide a range of services and supports that are designed to get to people early. We have a depression program called Bounce Back, which is really designed to get to people before things are worsening with mood. There are community-based mental health teams run through health authorities. Those are other services as well. We have crisis lines regionally across the province, which are designed to be a safe harbor for people who are experiencing crisis. We have other helplines like Here to Talk, which is a service for post-secondary students, and Kids Help Phone. A big player in BC right now, of course, is Foundry, which is opening up in cities and towns across the province. And
that's a youth mental health service. I know they have an office on Granville Street.
Shop care, trying to bring all of the services, mental health, sexual health, physical health, employment, education, into one space. I would say that there are a few agencies valiantly working towards seniors' mental health and, of course, Indigenous mental health as well. Those are some of the points. But all too often, David, I would say, if you look at the research and you look at the people who interact with us, all too often people say that their first point of contact, was the emergency department, the ER. And all too often, it's because the police have had needed to be called as well.
Would you describe that kind of network of different organizations and services and helplines as a mental health care system, or is it a patchwork, or does it stand in the same way that a medical system would for access?
I would say that there are great examples of excellent care across this province. I would say there are people valiantly working to help people with mental health problems. And I would say we have a road to go to make it a system of excellence, a system of coordination where you can ask once, as the previous minister would say, and we've said it too, where you can ask once and you can get that help quickly and fast. There have been countless reports written about people experiencing something quite different in the physical healthcare system and recognizing there are gaps still there too. But people experiencing, way more difficulty navigating, accessing, waiting, finding care within the mental health and substance use system. And within both those systems, if you could call them systems, you've got a difference between the two as well. And, many have argued over the years that the mental health system is the poor cousin to the broader health system, and then the substance use treatment system or the addictions treatment system is the poor cousin. What we continue to advocate for is to see mental health and substance use care placed on a much more equal footing with physical health care, recognizing that they're not the same, But they're so interconnected. You know, if you're living with schizophrenia, your physical health is impacted. If you're living with a number of physical health conditions, your mental health is impacted. And so given that interconnection, that joined up experience, because we're human beings, you know, how can we build a system, rebuild a system that can really reflect that? And all of that to say, David, we still have to push back on the experience of stigma. Like it's not always easy to ask for help. Sometimes there are consequences for asking for help. Sometimes you're asked for help when you're living with a mental health problem and you don't get it. It's not there when you need it at the right time, or you're deemed not to be sick enough and the care isn't there. You know, so all of that still at play, and all of that work still lies ahead of us, whether you be government, an organization, the public, decision makers, all of us, to make that better.
On that note, Mike, I guess my last question, since we only have a couple seconds left, is we have a new mental health and addictions minister, Sheila Malcolmson, in the province. If you have one New Year's resolution that you would like her to make to improve mental health care, one thing to do this year, what would that be?
Yes, I had the opportunity to connect with Minister Malcolmson the other day, and that's such a great question. It's so hard to think of one thing. I think the piece that I would say is to listen deeply, to listen carefully, and center the changes that are at the heart of her mandate on the experiences of people with direct and lived experience of mental illness and addiction. You know, in so many ways, the folks who live with mental health problems or substance use problems are the best positioned to point to how the system services, supports need to change. So to listen deeply and carefully and reverently to people with lived experience is something that's there's such an imperative to do that, David. That's what I would say.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Johnny. It's wonderful to have you on, and I wish you all the best in 2021.
Thanks so much. You too. Thanks so much, David. Take good care.
You too. And that was Johnny Morris. He is the CEO of the Canadian Mental Health Association, BC branch. And the Canadian Mental Health Association offers a program for people with depression and anxiety. Look up bouncebackbc.ca. And if you need help or find yourself in distress, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can call 211 on your phone to connect you to services and programs in your community. It's free and confidential. Or go to their website, bc211.ca. There's a texting option as well. Another service that's available for those in distress is the Crisis Center of BC. That's crisiscenter.bc.ca. They are also available online and at 1-800-784-2433. If you're having any thoughts of self-harm or suicide, call that line, 1-800-SUICIDE. There's also Mental Health Support Line at 310-6789.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.